Good morning, everyone. It's a beautiful snowy day here in Plainfield. Sunday, February 22nd, 2015. Our subject is mind. And thank you, Tom. We had a really good session on wisdom yesterday. So I think today we will go into the new birth. I'll finish that up this morning. So we are on top of page 18. Janet, would you like to read that first paragraph?
Yes, I would. Thank you. The purification or baptismals that come from spirit develop step by step the original likeness of perfect man and efface the mark of the beast. Whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. Therefore rejoice in tribulation and welcome these spiritual signs of the new birth under the law and gospel of Christ's truth.
Thank you. Okay, who would like to comment on that? What about developing step by step?
Well, I love this paragraph because, you know, we have Christian Science and it talks about man and God's image and likeness. And then here it is. Here's the explanation. These purification and baptismals, step by step, reveal this perfect man and efface the mark of the beast. It eliminates the awful arguments of error that claims otherwise. Who in this world is going to claim that man is perfect? Is man's God's image and likeness? Well, it is the forever fact, but step by step it needs to be revealed.
Yeah, the step by step means a lot to me because I know in the past I would try to force issues or not go step by step, take shortcuts, if you will, and if I could, and I would try. You know, maybe not to learn the lesson, just to get off the hook. That's all I wanted, was to get off the hook, whether it was a healing or whether I'd done something wrong. I just wanted it over. And this is what the step-by-step means. You can't do that. And in the times that I did try and maybe fudge through or push through, you end up having to repeat those steps. So even though... And I will say, because in my life at that time, it seemed so attractive just to get this thing over with any way I could. Don't face that challenge, whatever it is. Meet it step by step. Don't try to jump over it or avoid it. Let it come, the lesson. If you should be ill, learn the lesson that you need to learn. If you've made a mistake or done something, learn that lesson. Embrace it. Squeeze it like an orange. Get everything you can from it, all the good from it, because there will be good from it if you take it step by step. Why, it's a very important point. I don't think I ever realized how important it was until I've reflected on a few things. Okay, what is the mark? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that the step by step, I think, is something we just have to accept. Because no matter what, like you said, if you think you've done it in any shortcut way, you haven't. It's waiting for you to you're going to go through it again. I did. When I thought that, okay, well, I get some money from here, now it's over. No, I had to learn that supply is from God alone. And until that happened, I didn't have any shortcuts. It couldn't be. It's step by step, learning the lessons.
Thank you.
And I think that it's so important that I've learned to be so grateful for every step, every healing, every bit of progress, instead of thinking that, you know, something that's happened isn't significant because I'm not over a complete problem. That's what I used to do. And I've just learned how important it is to just be so grateful for every single bit of progress, because it is all part of a big transformation, and it is significant and it's important. And getting over any little problem, any little fear, anything is helping me to be able to help someone else that might be going through the same thing. So I think I've just learned how important that is.
Thank you. That's wonderful. And that is, our experiences do teach us compassion so we can help others. And one of the, you know, avoidances of a step is, you know, to go to the medical. And at times, if you have to do that, frankly, it's better that you do than you just suffer. Or better that you take that shortcut if at times you need to. But there again, if you do, the problem will probably still be around until you meet it in truth. Will be around. Everything must be met in truth, whatever it is. And notice in your life, if you are having a reoccurring experience over and over and over and over, well, that's because there's a lesson to be learned that you haven't learned yet. So keep at it. And just like in math, you might keep trying and keep coming up with the wrong answer over and over and over. But eventually, if you work at it, you will get there.
And don't get discouraged.
No.
But also don't get frustrated and quit.
Yeah, that's the big thing, to get frustrated and quit, to get frustrated. You're so frustrated over your lack of progress or your lack. Don't. As long as you're working things out, you are making progress, whether you see it or not. As Eddie says, when the smoke of battle clears, you will see the good you've done and earned. That's a paraphrase, but so never be frustrated. Know that you are making progress. What is the mark of the beast? Aha.
Material.
Go ahead.
I would think it's the material sense of living. It's the lie, the big lie from the beginning.
Yes. Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health, on page 327, what a pitiful sight is malice, finding pleasure in revenge. Evil is sometimes man's highest conception of right, until he grasps on good and grows stronger. Then he loses pleasure in wickedness, and it becomes his torment. The way to escape the misery of sin is to cease sinning. There is no other way. Sin is the image of the beast. To be effaced by the sweat of agony. It is moral madness which rushes forth to clamor with midnight and tempest. Then, yes, and what Florence said, this false concept of life, the human mind, the mark of the beast. And sometimes, you know, when you're really in it, it's almost as if you do have this big mark on your forehead announcing to the world. So, be aware of it. It's not the truth, but she says you've got to get rid of it. And sometimes the only way is the sweat of agony. She also calls, talks about it being lust and hypocrisy. So you can look up what she says on the image of the beast, but we should know what it is and to be aware of it so we can handle it and know its unreality. And then it goes on, the way you get rid of it is through chastening and scourging. And that's why, as Dede said, you should rejoice in every tribulation. And you will find that the new birth will come from it, from your tribulations. So never despair. Anyone else on that paragraph? Okay, the second paragraph. How about Linda?
Okay. The prominent laws which forward birth in the divine order of science are these: thou shalt have no other gods before me, love thy neighbor as thyself. These commands of infinite wisdom, translated into the new tongue, their spiritual meaning signify, thou shalt love spirit only, not its opposite, in every God quality, even in substance. Thou shalt recognize thyself as God's spiritual child only, and the true man and the true woman, the all-harmonious male and female, as the spiritual origin, God's reflection. Thus, as children of one common parent, wherein and whereby father, mother, and child are the divine principle and divine idea, even the divine us, one in good and good in one.
Okay, anybody on that?
Could I say something?
Yes. Is that Ingrid?
Zeri.
Oh, Zeri. Hi, Zeri. Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to just say that when I see this, one, it feels as if God is our father and mother, and we get away from this human sense of fathering and mothering. And then we are able, from this identification, to let go of this human bond or bondage.
Good, thank you. These are the laws that, which are going to promote the new birth, so we better be aware of them. Prominent laws, and the two, and there's the simple ones, the first commandment, and then also the Sermon on the Mount, love thy neighbor as thyself. You know, these are touchstones. When you feel like you're getting off in some way, go back to this. Go back to it. This is why we have these classes and roundtables and Bible studies, so you have these laws and rules in your heart to go back to. The renewing of your mind. If you don't know them, you can't go back to them and you'll get lost. I was reading, Linda had sent in an article about how much the Bible was, it's just tried to be erased from this earth. You want to say a few words about that, Linda?
In the history of the King James Bible?
Yes.
Yes, it's actually a wonderful, it's an amazing path that people took. And it goes way back to the different translations and the individuals who had to stand up against persecution and death and torture in order to translate the word so that all mankind could have access to God's word, rather than the priesthood that would try to control it or decide what people should know or think or hear about God. And these brave individuals at different points, and it'll be in an article coming up so that you can see it, took the time to translate this for people. And there was such a sense of independence and individual thought and unselfishness, really, to want to give and understand and free people.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, being burned at the stake for it.
Yes.
And time and time again, having it getting into the wrong hands. It's quite a story. We should be so grateful that we have a Bible to read and study. Do not take it for granted. Love it and cherish it and know it. And that this is your guide to life.
I'd like to say that the Bible, I'm so grateful that we're studying the Old Testament as well as the New Testament. My mother used to have just the New Testament, which she pored over greatly. But I'm so grateful for the Bible study because this law, thou shalt have no other gods before me, it's so obvious and prominent if you read the stories in the Old Testament. I mean, Solomon fell away. He became so grand and so wealthy. He achieved so much materially that he was open to false gods.
Yes. Yeah, thank you.
Well, it is throughout in the Old Testament, but one of the big points in the Old Testament is how difficult it was for most people to understand what that really meant. I mean, it took Jesus to lift their thought as to what it really means, and it took Mary Baker Eddy to lift human thought once more as to what it really means. I mean, what does it mean where she says here, thou shalt love spirit only, even in substance? What does that really mean?
This is Len. I would say, to me, it means there is spiritual significance to everything. Like somebody might look at a table and they say that's the substance of that is wood, but the true substance is something spiritual. It's a spiritual attribute of sturdiness, usefulness, and so forth, which endures forever. Those spiritual attributes endure forever. The wood, if you call it a substance, it's not really that substantial. It will not endure forever. So that's my I guess my understanding. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you can say the same thing about yourself, can't you?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And your neighbors.
Yeah, and if you see it as the only substance, then, well, there's great freedom in that. The truth of your being, and some of it we accept at first by faith, not by sight, of course, but by faith. And the more you accept it, the more you will understand it. So, so go back to these basic thoughts. Are you loving your neighbor as yourself? Do you recognize yourself as God's spiritual child only? And of course, none of us are perfect, so we need to be reminded of this often, to be thinking about it. And to get back to what we were talking about before, the great importance of our Bible, of our science and health, of prose work, and what Era would try to do to take it away, wipe it out, even to the effect that people don't read it anymore or don't know what's in it. So, and On the Carousel has been Discerning the Rights of Man by Richard Oakes, which we talked about a while ago at the round table, but that tells you how the fight to get the, quote, unauthorized literature out so that you could read what went on in Mrs. Eddy's household by Carpenter and others, how Era did everything it could to suppress that. The greater the good, the greater the opposition. And there was tremendous opposition to the Bible, to science and health and prose works, and to Mrs. Eddy's writings of those early workers. That's why we must cherish them all. Okay, anybody else on that paragraph?
Yes, love thy neighbor as thyself. This is was very challenging. But this week I've come across it, but I don't think it's made an impact like this. It's on page 205 of Science and Health. She writes, when we realize that there is one mind, the divine law of loving our neighbor as ourselves is unfolded. I find that, like all the others, want to go back to often because it's a challenge.
It is. And in our watching, you know, we go forth from this basis, from these absolutes, knowing that we're all brethren. We don't see the world as it would materially seem to be. We see it as God's creation. That will uplift it to the right sense of it. Thank you.
That's a wonderful point, because only as we see our neighbor as the idea of the one mind, as perfect as God made him or her, only then can we love them. I mean, really, spiritually, divinely love them. If we see our neighbor as having a fault, or as seeing a fault in us, we're not seeing them correctly and we're not loving them.
Yeah, there was an interesting in that Laura Sargent class notes. She speaks about malpractice. And she says, and this is absolutely true, if you think someone is malpracticing on you, you are the malpractitioner. How would that work? It's a slow.
Well, you're not seeing them seeing you correctly.
Right. You are malpracticing on them. You are seeing them in error. You are holding them in error, and so it goes around, and it has to stop somewhere. So remember that, because very often in the practice, you know, I'll hear people saying, well, someone is malpracticing on me, or someone is seeing me in an error, or other things. Well, to me, that shows the mark of the beast. They're doing something they shouldn't be doing. You've got to make sure you're not. And that's what Loving Your Neighbor is all about, by Mrs. Eddy in Miscellaneous Writing. You can't do that. You can't go there. We must be so clear on these things. And if you feel an error is somewhere working, it's not person, place, or thing, and you have every right to say, to tell the error to go back on itself and destroy itself, but never see it as a person or a place or a thing. It'll go back on itself and destroy itself. Its one intent is to get you bollocked up, to trip you up. And if you see one person malpracticing on you, pretty soon there are all a whole bunch of people malpracticing on you. And what is malpractice?
Wrong thinking.
Yes. The bland denial of truth. And it does happen to be in this Adam dream everywhere. So we do handle it, but not as person, place, or thing. And don't say someone is malpracticing on you, and or don't say it and leave it there, shall we say. That's not metaphysically correct. You never leave it there. You correct it in your own thought. And no, that's impossible, because there's only the one mind. And the one mind is the only mind that is all and has power. There is no other mind. You have to be clear on that. Otherwise, Christian Science in belief would become superstitious gobbledygook. So,
I want to comment there. Or are you done, by the way?
No, go ahead.
With a difficult health challenge that I'm going through, whenever I've made what feels like some progress, I'm having some conviction, I'm having more joy, and I actually feel better. The next day, it's as if I've been shot down with some shocking symptoms, you know, I can almost attest to I guess I could call it a fact, that error really tries to get you. And thanks for mentioning that. That's the time to not be impressed by error, but to really tell it off, to say, you know, God instead. God fills all space. God governs all action. And thanks for mentioning that. I have to be more aware of that. Because error is really, in my experience, the symptoms are really shocking sometimes. And it always comes after I've made some progress or my faith has been built up. So I have to be very vigilant. Thanks.
You're welcome. And you know, and we all should be knowing often, that we are a law unto ourselves. That mental malpractice cannot harm us, either when asleep or when awake. It cannot. It is powerless. It is not of God, and it is powerless. It does need to be handled. You can't ignore it. But just don't make it into a boogeyman. Don't give it power, the power that it doesn't possess. So.
And that's why.
Yeah, thank you.
390 to 393 on Science and Health are so helpful in situations like that. But she says to rise in the strength of spirit, to resist all that is unlike truth. And agree with thine adversary quickly, while thou art in the way with him. Suffer no claim of sin or sickness to grow upon the thought. Dismiss it with an abiding conviction that it is illegitimate. You really have to be tough.
Yeah.
Stuff like that comes at you.
Yeah. In fact, somebody gave a testimonial once, and they call those pages that you mentioned there industrial strength, Christian Science. And they applied that to, they had flu symptoms, and they said the flu symptoms just vanished right there and then. They applied that, what you were reading there.
Well, they're the command statements, and they're not just to be read, they're to be lived.
Right.
And they work because they're the truth.
They're the truth, yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, the next.
Mary, this is Ingrid.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I just want to make sure that I hear well. I thought you said, and of course, none of us is perfect, so if I heard that, I would just like to hear something, or did I?
Well, we're working at our problem. In truth, we are all perfect, yes, but we are relative as we're working things out. So, but in truth, we're all perfect. So let's go to the next paragraph. Lenny, with this recognition.
All right. With this recognition, man could never separate himself from good, God, and he would necessarily entertain habitual love for his fellow man. Only by admitting evil as a reality and entering into a state of evil thoughts can we, in belief, separate one man's interests from those of the whole human family, or thus attempt to separate life from God. This is the mistake that causes much that must be repented of and overcome. Not to know what is blessing you, but to believe that aught that God sends is unjust, or that those whom he commissions bring to you at his demand that which is unjust, is wrong and cruel. Envy, evil thinking, evil speaking, covetousness, lust, hatred, malice are always wrong and will break the rule of Christian Science and prevent its demonstration. But the rod of God and the obedience demanded of his servants in carrying out what he teaches them, these are never unmerciful, never unwise.
Thank you. Okay, any comments? Well, you see the first, what is the first error going on here? That's that second sentence.
Only by admitting evil as a reality.
Yes.
And entering into a state of evil thoughts.
Yes. Where it comes. And that's why one of the definitions I was given of animal magnetism that helped me so much is that animal magnetism is a belief in a power apart from God. So once you start admitting that evil is real, you are entering into the dream, the Adam dream, and you are getting mesmerized by animal magnetism. So here's another touchstone. When you start feeling poofed up, as I like to call it, ask yourself, what evil am I believing in? What evil do I see as a reality? Because you are. I know I was.
Oh, it's easy to do. Error is out there trying to impress itself upon us all the time.
Yep. But watch yourself and catch yourself. Go back to it. Always ask yourself that. It's a really good question to ask. Whatever's going on, are you believing in a power apart from God? And then, if you don't, then you'll start in a state of evil thoughts, entering into a state of evil thoughts. Go ahead. Who was someone saying something?
Then it's back to the first commandment.
Right. Having no other gods before you. We are kind of dissecting and analyzing thought here to help you. To help you to keep on that straight and narrow. And then the evil thoughts that you enter. Envy, evil thinking, evil speaking, covetousness, lust, hatred, malice are always, always wrong. Always wrong. Always wrong. Because very often, I know in my own experience, if I get into that, somehow I've justified why they're right. They're never right. They are always wrong. Another touchstone for you.
What does Mrs. Eddy tell us is the antidote to admitting evil as a reality?
It's God's allness.
Yeah, somewhere she says, if virtue and truth build a strong defense.
Yeah, well, that is so that the error doesn't pop around. When you have virtue and truth, you'll be immune to it. You'll also see it for what it is. You won't be duped by it. And that's the strong defense. And also, you will not see it as person. You will see it as animal magnetism, trying to operate, trying to weave its web. You know, envy is a very big one. It's an important one. That will creep in. So watch it. You know, you just start this comparing business. Don't compare. Comparisons are odious, as they say. We're all individuals. We're all blessed by God. We all have our own row to hoe. We all think about what you have to do for God. Make your own beautiful garden. Don't envy anybody else. For one thing, you never know what they're going through anyway. But it's a sure path to hell if you get on it. As are all the others in the list. Who else would like to speak to any of this?
Well, I know with envy, I used to envy, you know, there was times when I just felt like, man, I'm just not growing at all. I just feel like I am the snail in the race. And, you know, I compare myself to others who I just felt like, you know, every time I turned around, they were giving these great testimonies and this and that. And I had to, you know, I'd really let go of that. And because, you know, you're not loving your neighbor as yourself if you're envious of someone else's good or their progress or comparing yourself. You know, I had, and it took me a while too, because, I mean, it's not always easy to just toss that aside, but I began to be grateful for other people's progress because it was a beacon to me. And I also purposed in my own heart that it's like, you know what, even if I only grow a millimeter a day, I'm going to be content with whatever growth I make, and I'm not going to worry about how it compares to somebody else. And it's been, you know, mentally that it just kind of lifted a lot of weight off of me when I stopped all that nonsense. Well, yeah, stopped a lot.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's excellent. And in our testimonies, that's why when we give testimonies, give them, and that's what I think is so wonderful about our testimonies, you give them out of humility to share with others, not out of a sense of pride, of look what I've done and how great I am, and Christian Science works for me and it's so fantastic and making everyone feel terrible. You give it with great love and compassion and humility for your brother. And yeah, a major point is to, if some good did happen to your brother, then all that means it's available to happen to you too, and you should rejoice in another's good instead of be envious of it. The minute you're envious of it, what does that do?
Well, you count yourself out. It means that it's not for you.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes. You put a wall up.
Yeah, and it takes great patience and persistence to continue on. So, because I know that, you know, and in my experience, and that's what it takes, yeah, persistence and patience.
Yeah,
because the important discipline here is to recognize what God is doing for you. Because oftentimes if I feel like someone else is, you know, doing better than I am or something like that, it's because I'm failing to recognize what God is doing for me, and I'm not being grateful for it.
That's so true. It's a very bad state to be, and that's why Mrs. Eddy said that ingratitude is the unpardonable sin. And you're shutting the door. You're lifting the hand against yourself. God's not doing it. You're doing it to yourself. It's lazy mortal mind thinking. So, and you're not loving yourself as your neighbor because you're seeing your neighbor as God loving them more than you. And that's a lie. Thank you. All good's available to all of us. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you remember,
sometimes,
bless us all.
Yeah, God really does love you.
Right. What did you say, Lenny?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, and maybe this could be also in the form of a question. Sometimes I've heard the expression, you know, man's extremity is God's opportunity. And sometimes there have been a few testimonials where it really seems like that, because the person experiences a healing that happens in a certain way that is very unusual. Like there was one who experienced, he said he actually saw a glow of light, and he admitted it's unusual. He wasn't expecting that. And it really brought forgiveness out of him, and he healed pretty much on the spot. Another one testified that they felt like a veil of love just going across them, and they got healed right in that moment. So, or even another one said they made a plan to go to the doctor because they said nothing was yielding. As soon as they went to open the doorknob of the doctor's office, they realized right there and then they were healed. So what I want to say there is there's also the experience, it seems to me, where you're trying so hard, and maybe, I don't know if it's God's compassion or what you call it, but he sends the Holy Spirit to you and gives you an unusual experience, and maybe that's what's called man's extremity is God's opportunity. And I'm not sure if it happens all the time, but am I right in saying this, or what? Is it true?
When you reach out to God in total humility on your knees before Him, crying out to Him, He does. He answers that righteous prayer.
Yeah.
It's a prayer to know Him better. It's not necessarily or not a prayer for a list of things you want done, but a prayer to be closer, to love Him better, know Him better.
Right. And He responds in that way sometimes, yeah, in a way that's unusual.
Sometimes. Someone else, was it you, Lenny, that said something?
Oh, I was just adding on to an earlier thing, just saying that, you know, Masebi says what blesses one blesses all.
Yes.
If you see something blessing someone else, you can know that it's blessing you too, and it's like she describes in the chapter of prayer, it's that open fount that's just pouring forth. It's certainly not just giving it to one person, it's blessing everyone.
Yes, thank you. Always remember that. It blesses you, and you only shut the door when you think or get jealous of someone else. Anybody else, Florence, did you want to say anything?
Well, and I think, you know, the fact that our healings, our individual healings, is really impacting the whole world thought. I think the universality of the whole thing is so important, that to know every good we do, it's really good for all mankind. I just love to keep the thought of all mankind all the time, because then it brings the fact that all good is here for everyone.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah. It's not just some personal little bit of good that you were healed of the flu or the cold or whatever, but it's not the truth about anybody anywhere. Most important to be knowing that. That is loving your neighbor as yourself, and that's the sense of oneness and us all having the same Father, Mother, God, and all brethren. And that love brings great peace to your life. Otherwise, you're always afraid of people or seeing, as I said, boogeymen here or there, or what people are thinking about you and all of this stuff, which is, to me, it's hell. We must be each other. First ourselves and each other as God's child. And love each other that way.
I would say also the sin of pride. I was reading Miscellaneous Writings, the beginning of it, and in her second page she says, pride is ignorance. Those assume most who have the least wisdom or experience, and they steal from their neighbor because they have so little of their own.
Thank you. So true. Anyone else want to comment on any of those lists? Or it says, you know, if you're indulging in this evil, it will prevent the demonstration of Christian Science. So don't go there. You're only harming yourself. It's always how it works. God loves you. He would only is pouring forth good. So don't lift your hand up against yourself. Go back to your rules. Go back like a compass and keep yourself in line with these laws and principles of the universe that are for your great blessing. Is Tom there? Tom, could you read the next paragraph, the task of healing?
Okay. The task of healing the sick is far lighter than that of so teaching the divine principle and rules of Christian Science as to lift the affections and motives of men to adopt them and bring them out in human lives. He who has named the name of Christ, who has virtually accepted the divine claims of truth and love in divine science, is daily departing from evil and all the wicked endeavors of suppositional demons, can never change the current of that life from steadfastly flowing onto God, its divine source.
Thank you. You mark that sentence in your book if you haven't. Memorize it if you need to. This is one Mrs. Evans is always quoting. This is your answer to feeling you're not progressing. If you have named the name of Christ, and if you have done the best you can to accept the divine claims of truth and love and divine science, you are daily departing from evil. You are. Even if you think you aren't, you are, because you're working at it. So you are. And then all the wicked endeavors, and I love that, of suppositional demons. They're not really true, but they seem to be. Nothing can change the course, the current of that life from steadfastly flowing onto God, its divine source. It's a magnificent statement to know, to love, and to work with. That's the truth about you. The new birth. Keep it in your heart. And I hope as we're doing these things, you are marking things in your book that you will remember and work with. And this is certainly one of them. Anybody else on this paragraph?
I just wanted to comment on what a comfort that is, because sometimes I think I fall into the trap of, okay, well, I want to see the progress. I want to see it right now. I want to know that, you know, I am doing the right thing and get rid of this challenge that I'm having. But by just knowing that the steps you're taking, you know, you're doing the right thing, and that every day a little bit of this false belief is leaving you.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's also a warning, because the more useful you become to God and to mankind, the more the devil's going to try to throw stuff in your way. And it's all suppositional.
Yeah. And it'll also be more clever, more cunning, you know, less easy for you to discern, perhaps. That's why you've got to keep all these tools sharpened. Keep your toolbox sharpened so you're aware of the subtle suggestions, the self-justification that would get you off the track, because it would really try. And the beginning of that statement, too, about the task of healing the sick is far lighter than of so teaching the divine principle and rules of Christian Science. So, and it is, the real healing is learning the science. As we've talked about, healing is a byproduct of your understanding. It's just a byproduct. That's why this understanding is so important.
Why does she say that healing people is easier than teaching them?
Everybody wants to give up the uncomfortable feeling of you know, especially physical, you know, even mental, yes. We want to be free. We want to feel good. So I guess we're more receptive there than when, you know, the task of really living it daily to get it in your heart, yourself, and be a law unto yourself, it demands more.
That's exactly right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, the next two paragraphs, Elizabeth.
But taking the livery of heaven, wherewith to cover iniquity, is the most fearful sin that mortals can commit. I should have more faith in an honest, drugging doctor, one who abides by his statements and works upon as high a basis as he understands, healing me, than I could or would have in a smooth-tongued hypocrite or mental male practitioner. Between the centripetal and centrifugal mental forces of material and spiritual gravitations, we go into or we go out of materialism or sin and choose our course and its results. Which then shall be our choice, the sinful, material, and perishable, or the spiritual, joy-giving, and eternal?
Okay, any comment?
Well, when given a choice, it's a no-brainer. I mean, the joy-giving and eternal, you know, the spiritual.
Yeah. Yeah. And the centripetal.
I wasn't sure how to pronounce that.
Okay.
Well, those are the forces that pull you towards them or push you away from them.
So be aware of it. Be aware of those forces and choose. Choose to grow closer to God always. And then, too, this idea of being a hypocrite, the worst thing is to use your whatever, your Christianity, your science, or whatever, what, to hide, to put it as a smoke screen for wrong living and acting. God forbid. You know, Jesus gave hypocrisy the sternest condemnation and rebuke. Let your life express your thoughts, words, seamless garment, one accord. Don't be try to fool people or trick anybody. You can't, because God knows the hearts of everyone anyway, and that's all that matters. Okay, I want to finish it today. So, Florence, read the last paragraph, please.
The central sense of life and its grand pursuit is of itself a bliss, help-giving, and joy-inspiring. This sense of life illumines our pathway with the radiance of divine love, heals man spontaneously, morally, and physically, exhaling the aroma of Jesus' own words, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest."
Thank you. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Spiritual sense of life and its grand pursuits. And I know it's what you're all finding here, that it is in itself a bliss, health-giving, and joy-inspiring. So our time is over. I wanted to thank you all for your good participation. And I think next time we're going to go to questions and answers. Starts on page 31 of Miscellaneous Writings. It's long. We'll just take it a bit at times. But it's important because I know many of the questions I get are questions that Mrs. Eddy answers in these pages. So it will be so good to get thoroughly educated as to what she says. It's a wonderful, it's an amazing chapter. And so before we go, I'm just going to read a few things about mind from Bicknell Young's 1937 College on pages 2 to 5. A divine idea carries within itself the power to accomplish the divine purpose, and the responsibility of its unfoldment belongs to divine principle, who cares for each detail of its progressive being. This is the truth about you, about your children, about a business, about our church, a wonderful thing to work with. And then, also, rely on mind to do everything. Mind is never uncertain. One with mind is absolute guidance. It is not a matter of what others may think. In the measure of our clearness, we are unassailable. All of mind is present with all of its infinite possibilities, and that is the law to this occasion. Claim your divine right to understand it right now. It belongs to you. Claim it and expect it. Always insist upon having the wisdom that shows you what to do under any difficult circumstance. There is a power always available to you that is greater than any human power and superior to any combination of circumstances. The thought which is in accord with God is allied to omnipotence.
Amen.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Have a go on.
Thank
have
you.
A
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.